take an intro.
Hey, how you doing, honey? How you doing today?
Good, good.
How was the kids? How about this one? You like this one?
Oh, yeah, that one's pretty.
That's pretty right there. I like the blue balls.
Blue Balls Pod.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Blue Balls. Season 10.
The blue ball. The blue balls.
Season 10. 10.
Like spit bubbles on the lips of Schoolboy Q. Ladies and gentlemen, you've got blue balls. My name is Jake Beckhardt, and I am your intrepid co-host. I am joined this week, as every week, by my intrepid co-host, Mr. Trey Fillmore. Trey, have you listened to the new album yet?
Schoolboy Q? Yeah, I have.
It's good. Yeah, it's fun. It got Best New Music. I was listening to it while I was cleaning today, because it got Best New Music on Pitchfork, which the failing Pitchfork Times, which I still can't help but check in on, read the newsletters, and see what the fuck's good, even though they gave my buddy an undeserving 6.8 on his new album release. Yeah, but it's not, you know, it's damning with faint praise. You know what I mean? This is Matt, our buddy Matt from home, who's in a band called Sheer Mag that some of you might know about. And who, they used to be the golden child of these cretins who will soon be working out of GQ's basement, and now they're sicking critics on them that don't seem to like their music very much, or you know, just sort of fundamentally in concept. But who cares about that? Yeah, I was bopping around. It's fun. It's a little concept forward, which I don't mind. But then I put on Mad Villainy to do the rest of my cleaning at my house, and that was. I mean, that album's just one of the greatest of all time. It's just fucking crazy how much it still holds up. Trey, what's
still waiting on that Your Old Droog Madlib album that should be coming hopefully this year.
Yeah? Is that rumored? I didn't know about that. Your Old Droog, you know, who of course
patron saint of this podcast.
That's exactly right. Gave us our
The first, like, 3 seconds of every podcast for every season has been his song.
Was the sample that he flipped. That's right.
And the entirety of the first season, we just used his music. We didn't care.
Yeah, fuck yeah. Thanks, Yod. He's great. I mean, he's always showing up on my new release radar playlist on Spotify. Him and Snow the Product, they locked in on, oh, this guy likes these two tracks, so we're going to give every single track that drops that has even a feature from either of these rappers. Great.
We should move on, obviously. But before we do, speaking of rap, I'm a big ally to women rappers. I think it's a fantastic resurgence that they're having in the last
ally.
Year or so. Obviously, Ice Spice, the second patron saint of this podcast. But I love the bars that come are just undefeated. This week, oh, I'm forgetting her name. She has a new song coming out with Kenny Beats, but you are not ready for this line. I made him eat where I pee at. He want to know where I be at.
It is really good.
It's so good.
I can't help saying.
I can't stop walking down the street saying, I made him eat where I pee at.
Do you like Sexy Red, Trey?
I do. She's included in this conversation.
Yeah, I figured. She's, you know, a silent partner in it. I do, too. It feels like it's not for me, as so many things do. But it's fun. It's a good time. She's headlining Gov Ball, right? Serena was saying, my wife was like, I don't know who the fuck any of these people are. And I was like, I know who Sexy Red is. Because she raps about fucking. Felt very
proud
of myself.
They're all great.
You know what else is great, Trey?
Winning a home game?
Oh my god, I'd forgotten what it felt like. Holy shit. 3 points. In the can. Happy to take it. A 2-1 victory over Toronto FC at home. This is the real home opener, folks. Last week was a confused friendly that accidentally got registered as a real game. This was NYCFC's coming out party. A 3 points when both of us were reticent to predict one last week, Trey. Now, of course, there were some exempted players, and this is maybe one of the major reasons why we were able to squeeze out a win against a scary-looking Toronto FC, a lossless Toronto FC until they met us. Do you credit that entirely with our victory, or did something click on the NYCFC side in terms of play that cannot be denied? Is Nick Cushing vindicated this week?
Certainly no. I think it would take more than one game, of course. I think if we lost, he would have been fired. But I...
Do you? Just,
I do. Taking the survey of the scuttlebutt that has gone on around this game in the past few days, I think the general consensus seems to be the most accurate one, which is rare. But is, like, this game was good. But it's just kind of like signs of life. It was a nice reminder that this team is not absolute dog shit. But there's still two very difficult games to come on the road. But this was a necessary reinvigorating session that this team had to go through, and that they at least performed well. You know, it wasn't star-studded. It wasn't goals and goals and goals and opportunities and a complete domination necessarily, but it was all in all a very good performance, a very solid performance that this team can certainly build on, of course.
Do you think to the first half of my question/proposition, what about it was more possible because of the missing players on Toronto's side?
Well, you know, I think Toronto's backup goalkeeper did a really solid job, actually, like stopping all of Bakar's shots yet again.
Sure.
But he did pretty admirably. You know, the two goals he conceded were fairly difficult to save. And he seemed to distribute really well. But, you know, they were missing that line leader in the back. They were missing Sean Johnson's clutch. I think he actually probably was a little caught on the back foot on Santi's free kick too, but
I was going to ask, would Sean Johnson have let that free kick in?
I would say we've seen him save similar. That doesn't mean that that would not have gone in. I just say we've seen him save similar. We've seen him let in similar too, so it's hard to say. So I don't know if that was a tipping point. I think in terms of maybe like defensive, they wouldn't have given up as many chances for sure. But most importantly was Osorio being out of this match. He's their third DP. He's their longtime player, captain of the team. He has really grown into himself over the last few years. So important to them. And frankly, because this game was all about how we just had numbers in the midfield and dominated from there, and it provided a security so that we could press extremely effectively. Like, this match, more than the other three we played, showed the efficiency of the press and how integral it can be. We saw in that first half, NYCFC had 70% of possession. That is a lot to do with just numerical advantage all over the field. So I think when you don't have Osorio in this game, they were kind of left. They had to revert to the Toronto FC of last year, which is like Bernardeschi and Insigne surrounded by a lot of trash, and it hurt them obviously. Like, just the first 10-15 minutes, NYCFC really had to fight to get into the game. But after that, once they got a good read of what was going on, where the spaces would be, a little more comfortable on the ball, gathered more possession, it was not devastating. You know,
do you think it's just a question of controlling the midfield that led us to be able to dominate the offense so thoroughly? I mean, this was a lot of fucking shots on goal. I was struck by how I'd forgotten how many different players on our side had realistic and quality chances, and I feel like that doesn't happen if you have Osorio. You know, I don't know, like countering with the creativity that you're talking about.
Yeah, it's the space on the top of the box, right? It's the space that has been so rare for NYCFC to take advantage of. Santi just, you know, he parked there. He just allowed himself to dominate that space and create off of himself. We really saw the best version, the best kind of caricature of what we want Santi to be. Whoa.
Freudian slip.
It's, you know, we can blow out the Santi conversation just briefly. It's just that I'm just tired of getting into these conversations of, is Santi a 10? Santi's not a 10. Why do we keep saying he's a 10? Blah, blah, blah. It's like, because that's where he's playing. That's why he's a 10. All these formations, you know, someone asked him after the game. I think it was Michael Allen who said, like, you know, where do you play and what do you prefer? He's like, I do what the coach tells me. And I have flexibility where no matter where I am, I get to move wherever I want. And it's like, end of story. And I was like, yeah, that's the best version of Santi. He is a combination creator. He works well if he has a dance partner to work with. And instead of just relying on like Hannes Wolf to make these devastating runs, he could use Keaton and Perea and Julian and Bakrar especially, you know, to like bounce passes off of, you know, he could run into space with, he could hold the ball, find space and then find Kevin O'Toole or Micha. Like he's so good with other players, and we really saw that shine in this match. So I think that's another key, like when Osorio's not in and when NYCFC was able to dominate possession, just like having that comfort level in and that's probably why this team gets so frustrated against pressing teams. It's like there's not like a Maxi who is so comfortable sitting on the ball that they can create a level of gravity or a level of calm. But Santi, like, if he has the freedom of space and the freedom to play without the ball, then the team can be more successful and it empowers other players as well. And so that was great to see. Okay, talk for a second because I forgot something in my head.
I was going to say, I think, like, the thing that I've been thinking about in the echoes of this match is sort of something that you're already making reference to, which is this question of, like, is Santi Rodriguez the main character of this season? Which is, I think, something that he's not struggled to be, but maybe shared that space with a number of other players in past seasons. But, I mean, despite not being, you know, having the 10 qualities that you're talking about with Maxi, where you can settle and set the tempo, having a sort of more youthful, more spark plug quality to the way that he approaches offense, it does still seem entirely localized around him. He creates a field of energy that other players are able to take advantage of, and creates a force of gravity when he's driving that also opens other players up. It's hard to imagine what this side looks like or what the offensive strategy looks like without him. And to me, that's what makes him kind of the main character of the... I mean, like, and we'll see in particular as we see his goals and assists grow, or one hopes anyways, over the course of this season. But I do sort of... It feels like he's who the team's strategies are built around right now, which is exciting. Because I think that's always been a potential, but that he's always instead been a component in a sort of like broadly moving, you know, on-field strategy. And now it feels apparent to everyone in the office, this is the most consistent player we have, certainly when it comes to offense.
Certainly. And look, he's a DP this year. You know, that comes with a level of weight and the amount of years he's been here, one of the only players that was on that cup team, you know, there is a level of responsibility. He's grown up. He's, you know, learning a lot more English so he can communicate with like Hannes and some other players. He's trading jerseys at halftime with Insigne. I think he is slowly realizing he can become that player. It's still early days, obviously. I think that's obviously another main takeaway of this match, but it's thrilling to see. I love Santi. I want to see him do well, and we're beginning to see that, but I just think he works well. Yeah, he has so much velocity as a player and as a creator that it seemed like It seems like, yeah, if you have that level of velocity and you hit a brick wall over and over again, you start to see stars. And when he runs into Jello instead, he can absorb those hits and still make things happen. Now, I do want to say the other thing that made us really successful in this match. You know, Osorio out led to a lot of pressing and things like that. But the most important thing in this match was, like, this interesting matchup between Toronto, which plays a three at the back system and plays wide and wants to get the play. They want to get the ball out wide. Insigne and Bernardeschi, they want to get the ball out wide. And that stumbled us in the first few minutes of this match because on a small field, they were still playing wide and it threw us for a loop, defined by their goal that they scored, right? That was, they found an outside channel for a through ball directly into the half space. And it was completely exposed. And I think our defense was just caught on the flat foot. I think Matt Freese could have done a little better on that play. And just all, but it was all the whole team just like unready to get outflanked when they should have been, they could have expected it. But what I liked was that NYCFC reacted extremely well in multiple different ways. Firstly, Micha found the space. He learned from the port. It seemed like he learned from the Portland game how to find the space behind, which in a, you're facing a three-back system, it's gonna be there. He found that space, and when you have a player like Julian, we'll talk about him too. Like he was able to do it unimpeded, and that severely limited the impact of Insigne on this match. Again, not having Osorio to play off of, just it seemed like limiting Insigne's chances few and far between is like that was Toronto's lifeline the first three games they played, and having Micha play so high and comfortably so limited it. And on the other side, you have Kevin O'Toole, extremely involved in the offense in this match, and was able to find the space in between the center backs. And again, look at his goal, the second goal that we scored, extremely, you know, just an awesome sense of that attacker's mindset that he has since he was developed as a winger to find that space in between the center backs. It's so valuable, and he took advantage of it too. Like, okay, you're going to play wide? Well, we're on a small field, bitch. I'm going to work inside. And he did it over and over and over again. And then when you have Hannes, Santi, and Kevin all at a high level, like, that's just a quarter of the game where Toronto's not going to have the ball, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we felt that in just, like, in, again, the number of chances that we saw. It was all over the place. So let's talk about the bulk of the chances, or the sort of, you know, the perennial conversation for this, like, first portion of the season. Bakrar's near misses.
Sure.
Why do you think it is, and maybe I'm, like, reading it poorly, you know, I'm the amateur here, that's the role that I play. So let me ask the question that the dumbest of our listeners will share with me. Why can't Moncef Bakrar kick at anything other than the goalkeeper?
You know what? What's so funny is I have a group of friends that is like the post-game drinking buddies, you know? Been so for years. Love them. Shout out. Matt and Sharon and Liza and Charlie and etc. And one of them, I think it was Sharon, who said, Bakrar, like, when he's doesn't have the ball, he seems like the greatest player all time. And then when he gets the ball, he turns into a six-year-old. and then I was like, that's a very broad but, you know, understandable statement. And then I see Paul Harvey 2 days later going like, hey, I rewatched the game and it looks like Bakrar has the yips, like, when he gets the ball. I was like, okay, so, like, the drunk casual fan and the supremely genius soccer watcher agree. It must be true, and I agree. Like, the most frustrating thing is watching Bakrar, especially in this game, but in the last two games, like, he is so fucking good. Like, in just, like, take 99% of, like, everything he does on the field is perfect. He never gets tired, ever. And this is Ramadan, bitch. Like, he was fasting all day. And still, like, he ran like a motherfucker. He's extremely good in our system playing in the press. He find so many good pockets of chances. I had to tweet out that you know, just the non-penalty expected goal leaders this season so far through four games. And he's in the company of the best players in this league. The Cuchos, the Messis, the Almadas, the fucking Acostas, the blah, the Giacomakis. You know, just fucking name any of the best players in this league. And Bakker's right there when it comes to creating chances. On this shit team that barely shot the ball the first two matches of this season. So, like, he is... I love the way he plays soccer as a striker. It's so good to watch. He's such a natural. And then when he gets the ball, instantly... he's staring down at his feet. He's taking an extra touch. His first touch gets away from him. And it's obviously the shooting. It's like he can't convert anything. It's all going straight to the keeper, over the bar, straight to the keeper. Yeah, it's frustrating. But here's my underlying thing. Like, he converted goal chances last year. Not at an extremely high level, but at least he did. This year, he's not. Would you rather have someone who consistently gets you the good chances and is fucking freezing cold and on an extremely unlucky streak? Or do you want the guy who's extremely lucky all the time and scores but doesn't know how to create chances very often? No, you want the guy who can consistently create chances but is cold, because when that other guy's luck runs out, you're fucked. And with Bakker, at least we're creating pressure and creating chances, even for a rebound or a corner or something like that. So it sucks. It's weird. I don't think we've ever seen a forward play for this team that's been so cold. But I love everything except for the shooting. I'm absolutely in love with. And when he shoots, I want to, you know, wring his neck. But it's such a weird phenomenon. But I talked to him after.
Go ahead.
I just talked to him after the game, and he said like. He got called up to the Algerian national team and for the first time. And he said, yeah, I'm going to go, and I hope I score some goals and can bring them back here.
I feel that. And I think that he can and he will be able to. But that's the thing that I don't... Right? Like, conversions aren't... There's a funny nebulousness about the way the conversions are factored into the way that we talk about expected goals. Because it's not really a question of luck, is it? It's like a little bit of a question of mentality, and it's a little bit a question of luck, and it's...
Sure.
Right? Like, and it's the self-perpetuating thing, but also there are elements of it. I mean, I'm thinking about what my friend said about James Harden, which is, like, there are some guys that are just losers. You know what I mean? I'm not saying this about Monsef. I'm saying when it comes down to the wire, whether that's in a single match... or whether that's in a season, in the playoffs, or whatever, right? There are some guys that struggle to deliver chronically. And it's not necessarily going to be just a waiting game. That doesn't show up in expected goals. Some guys fail to deliver chronically. I don't know that that's Monsef. I really don't. I don't think that it is, because I think we've seen him put goals in the back of the net in other situations, and in clutch situations, in situations where we really needed somebody to bolster our hopes as we were... you know, hoping against hope that we would make the playoffs. We didn't, of course. But if we had, it would have been on the back of goals that Monsef Bakker did score. But to also say it's just a matter of time, it's not necessarily true, is it?
You know, it's not. It's a waiting game. You know, that's it. This is what frustrates fans, right? Is that they ask, why isn't he scoring? Or like, he can't score. What's the problem? What's going on? And the problem is that you can't answer that question. You can't go like, this is what he's doing wrong. This is what he's doing right. It's, you have to say like, that's how finishing is, baby. Like, some players like this month at this time and in this team aren't going to score. Like, finishing sucks. You know who right? Like, I always think back to like Steven Mendoza. Of course, friend of the pod, Steven, who spelled his first name like three different ways. You remember him well, I'm sure. What is that, 2017, 2018? 2017, it must be, right?
Yeah, I think that's right. Of course I remember him. I don't remember...
You know, he...
What, he had a lot of speed, right?
Yes, very fast player. And we used him like... you know, not as an out-and-out forward. He played more in the midfield, but someone who just was not scoring goals for us. Then he leaves our team, goes to Brazil, and becomes, like, the most dangerous striker in that whole entire league. Like, it's sometimes finishing is just fucking weird like that. It's hard to point out. I don't know if it's a James Harden situation. It's more because James Harden scores in the regular season. I think it's a cool trope, but not necessarily applicable. I think it's
no. I know. I'm not saying that it's the same.
I'm not saying don't give up.
What I'm saying is there's an ineffable quality about sports, you know, that like that soaks in that is not necessarily accounted for here, and that it is related to scoring. It is related to finishing. It is related to delivering on the chances yes. that you're creating.
Yeah.
That's the only parallel.
I think
that
he
I'm
has the yips. He has the yips.
Is the yips?
So in my opinion,
is the yips like? I feel like the yips is baseball specific, but maybe that's me being pedantic.
No, it's not baseball specific. Like, look at like. There's like basketball players that like their free throws go down the fucking tube after a while.
I just mean as a phrase. Like, it feels like there should be a different phrase for it in the sport that we're talking about.
What, the fucking flips? What do you want?
Yeah, I guess
want
me to invent a new word for it? Something more globally. The yips feels so American and so specifically like early 20th century American. Real.
They use it in golf too. Don't worry about it.
Okay, I won't worry about it. Thank you.
I think it's but that's just my opinion because I'm like optimistic and hopeful. I just don't think you can deduce from watching him play that like this is a player that can't score. I think it's just like he's getting himself in positions to score. I think it's like once he gets one in, hopefully that'll help. But look, it could be but I'm not going to make a decision here. Look, I can't. It's like maybe he won't ever score again. I don't know. I just know that he does literally everything else perfectly. Like, he's so good to watch as a striker on this team. It's phenomenal. He's a phenomenal player. He just can't score, which is the most important thing.
Trey.
Yes,
you know who can score? Kevin O'Toole, hilariously.
Yes, he
did. And that's awesome, and that's great. And he did find the space, and thank you for lighting that up. I did feel like this really was Julian Fernandez's goal as much as it was Kevin O'Toole's. Like, the placement
yep.
of that assist from the outside of the foot seems outrageous to me. Inconceivable, in the words of the great Wallace Shawn. Can you talk a little bit about this? Is this your vindication moment on Julian Fernandez?
I think this goal was a perfect kind of, like, climax of both of their games in relative to the rest of the season. It was great because look, Kevin O'Toole has not had a great season. He didn't have a great preseason. I'm sure he's aware. It just the game wasn't there for him. He wasn't finding the game well. He was caught on the back foot. He wasn't getting into attacking spaces. Some of that is his fault, some of that is other players' faults. But he had not been extremely strong, but in this match he just instantly kind of recognized where he needed to be at all times. He really found the match early on, and that was a boon. That was great to see, and like that's what we need from that spot. We know that the wingback positions are two of the shakiest that we have on this team, and that's no detriment to Kevin O'Toole. That's just, you know, that's MLS roster building, baby, you know. And he comes out and he plays a fantastic game and caps it off with like a beautiful run into the box and a pitch perfect fucking header, just a bullet to the top corner, and he put it where the keeper couldn't even get it. And I think that was a great kind of exclamation point on it. Such a great game that he had, and I hope that bolsters his confidence going forward. It should. And then you have Julian, who you know, has a different story of this season and preseason where he's been battling injuries. You know, he lost the starting spot in the last game against the Timbers. He's been, you know, fighting nagging injuries through preseason, so he didn't really have a full preseason to get fully fit or into the match and then or into any of the games. And then in this match, I personally think that Julian took a second to kind of find the pace of the match and where he would be best needed. But not only that goal that he had the assist on, but he was finding Micah extremely well. He was pressing, you know, as suitable as we needed him to. You know, with the formation that we have, when we press defensively, it goes to a 4-4-2. So a majority of the onus is on Santi and Bakar, and they do it extremely well. But, you know, every player has you have to defend as a team. In these kinds of systems, I think Julian did well. But I think he really found himself in the match as it went on. He got more confident. He tried more fun stuff as the game went on, and it became more and more useful. And that's why this assist was so good. Was like, previous to the assist, he started like trying out these long shots that we know are in his bag, and he started, you know, finding players with some trickier passes and things like that. So it was a nice kind of overall it was exemplary of like where he had gotten to in the match and finding his way, and you hope he as well can build on this performance, you know. So I think like Kevin found the game from the beginning and wanted to correct kind of some previous performances, and I think Julian, who had such a up and down off season and season, finally like slowly grew into this game where it became a place where he could really affect it in a beautiful way. And I think Julian is that necessary wild card that you need on these CFG teams. Like, shit can get boring sometimes and it can get frustrating, but when you have a player like him who just can create out of nowhere, there's no one else on the team that can create magic out of nowhere like Julian Fernandez. And that's what makes him exciting. It can make the team exciting, and it makes him so valuable. It's just the overall level of talent mixed with his bravery as a soccer player is a joy to watch. Obviously, I'm in love with him as well as a soccer player. It's just like I plant my flag in it.
Sure, absolutely. But we remember the last guy you planted your flag in.
Who?
Talish Magna.
Yeah, but don't worry about it.
Let me ask this. Can we talk about the Keaton Parks red card?
Yes. Let's talk about Keaton Parks in general, sure. But also the red card.
Absolutely. Keaton Parks was parksing, perhaps a little bit more aggressively, a little bit more front-footed than usual was my experience. What about you?
Yeah, you know what I find interesting? And like, I think there's multiple ways to, like, if you want to narrativize.
That's right.
That red card, I think it's funny given what he said to us at the end of last match against Portland, where he said these young players don't know how to win and we can't bask in one gold leads and shit. And then he goes like mere minutes after we go up 2-1, he goes studs up. Like, clear as day red card. Mm-hmm. No argument. I know they didn't show the replay in the stadium, but let me tell you, it was pretty obvious red card. And I like to read it two ways. One is that he was so motivated not to bask in the 2-1 loss that he was willing to go into every tackle like, we are not going to lose this game, and went over his skis. Or he got the red card to be like, all right, guys, prove it to me you know how to win a one lead game. I'll even take myself out so I can watch and see how you can handle 10v11. Obviously it's neither of those. But yeah, I just find it interesting that after that, I think that those comments, look, I don't know if the rest of the team saw those comments, but some of the team members seem to have seen other tweets about the last game. So perhaps they did see that. And, maybe they were motivated to perform in this game at a certain level, and that Keaton Parks, like, you know, he didn't have the greatest game. I think he was super important in, you know, when the possession gets to 70% and Keaton Parks is on your team, you know, he has something to do with it in a positive way. But, you know, he missed a pretty open chance. He, you know, there was just moments where he could have done better. And then, yeah, there's stupid red card. That was stupid. He knows better, and that sucks. And it debilitates us for the next match. Like, we'll see what a Keaton Parks-less midfield does against Cincinnati. But that sucks, but if anything, at least taught us a lot. It taught us that the team is not a team that is going to bask in one goal leads. It's a team that is capable of holding a lead. It's a team that was capable of both. You know, they played a high line after Keaton went out. They weren't afraid not to. And I thought that was a valuable lesson learned. You know, a valuable line in the sand that they were drawing. Like, you're going to have to beat us like you would normally beat us, even though we're a man down. And it's a level of resolve we have not seen from this team in a very long time. And so that was refreshing. So the Keaton Parks red card is obviously bad, but it taught us a lot of good things.
Yes, I completely agree. I that was my next talking point, not for talking points, but for this match, was the question of what was the difference in terms of how NYCFC played the remaining 30 minutes, which I thought was astonishing. Again, baby brain me saw it's hard to tell the difference between the cause and the effect. Either the cause or the effect, or like what was perceivable on the field, was the offense is not slacking. There was no attempt, half-hearted or wholehearted, to park the bus.
Yep.
Right? There was a continued yep. pressure on goal. As you said, the high press like created this. What made that so? Like, it felt impossible to sustain for 30 minutes, and yet we did sustain it. With cracks, for sure, but it managed. Are there any, I don't know, plaudits that you want to throw out to the way that the remaining 10 men, whoever they were at whatever time, played this match out?
I think they kept their cool. You know, I was not extremely privy to the whole halftime skirmish that was happening.
Right,
I kind of saw it halfway as it was happening. Like, people were like, what's going on? Because, you know, whatever, people are getting up to pee or whatever. So, but that seemed like a moment where this team had shown in previous matches, I'm thinking of St. Louis, most specifically, you know, get caught up in the emotion of the game, the frustration of not winning, and, you know, concede at some bullshit, you know, primal level. That is not going to help you win games. But this team came out in the second half and continued to dominate after a feisty midfield shoving match or whatever it was. And I think that continued into, you know, they scored the goal, they go up, and the emotions are riding high. Keaton gets the red, but they didn't fall trap into bad referee decisions. Like, there was two kind of, you know, Matt Fries got taken out low. I thought that was pretty dirty, frankly. He was convinced, you know, it wasn't a foul and everything's okay, and he has the best, you know, viewpoint of it. But I don't know, man. That guy kind of looked at your legs before he fell down into mm-hmm. them. I don't think it was very cool. And then Bakar got elbowed straight in the face. They didn't go to replay on that. So, you know, there was moments where the most pessimistic version of NYCFC would lose their cool, and that could reverberate into choking away the lead. But they held their composure, and that's the positive you can take away from this match, is like not getting trapped. You know, as we say about this team, is like for the past year and a half, they've been a team that plays down to bad opponents and has managed to play up to some good ones. But this was a place where they could have played down to, you know, a Toronto team that's coached well and has one or two extremely talented players, but on a talent level as a whole is certainly much lower than this team. And they didn't bow down to them. They kept the pressure up, and that was impressive. And so I think that's the main takeaway, is like keeping everything together.
It's great. It feels like an adaptive strategy, you know? It feels like the first time that this team has been operating on a game plan willing to stick to it. It felt like a mature performance, and that's why it feels, you know, it's early to call anything a bellwether, but it felt so much, not just because of the win did it feel like a turning point, but because it didn't really feel like we got away with something at the end of the day. And we did. We were down a man for 30 minutes, for a third of the game.
Yeah.
Anything else worth
and and just to like put a pin on all of this is like, as Matt Doyle pointed out against Portland, is like, this team plays well when they have possession. They don't know how to play without the ball, and they still don't, frankly. But they they made sure they had the ball throughout the majority of the match, and that is a mature decision. And secondly, you know, I had the one thing is like, let's, you know, grain of salt. You know, this was a good, not fantastic performance. Obviously, you want Bakar to convert more. You don't want to get stupid red cards. You want to be able to, you know, even dictate more so. But for the most part, it was a good match. But, you know, I had Brad Sims come give me a little chat after Santi scored his goal. And he was like, he pointed out, which is accurate, we haven't scored a set piece since Goody's miracle free kick against Atlanta, which propelled us to winning a cup. And I, in my head, he said that, and I was like, yeah, man, but this is not like, I don't think we're going to go out and blank Cincinnati and Miami on the road now that we scored a free kick. Like, I don't, it didn't feel like that to me.
Right.
It didn't have the same reverberation. Like, that's a nice, it's good to score a free kick. Don't get me fucking wrong. I've missed it, but It didn't necessarily feel like, okay, now the page has been turned and like the tides have changed. It just felt like this was a good, we got some good touchstones, you know, in this match to,
yeah, but just,
to build off
I
of.
Totally, but even the psychological element. I mean, sure. Not just the win, but the win from behind. That is not a thing that this team does well. It's not been a thing that this team does well for some time. It's one of them.
Couldn't even hold a lead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but right, like leaving that aside, this was a big, this was a, and like that thing that I'm talking about is also like a big morale booster because it makes it more possible to do it again. You know, it makes it less likely that you're going to fall into disrepair because you go down in the seventh minute because you know that you've done it and you can repeat that again against a formidable team. A slightly weakened, but a formidable team nonetheless. Trey, we've got to get to talking points. We just have to.
Yeah.
Talking points. Good news, that was the Talking Points theme song, and these are the Talking Points. We don't have to wait any longer. Trey, you know what we didn't talk about last week?
What?
The NWSL.
The
return of Gotham as cup winners. Can they double it up this season? Do we care? We're not a Gotham podcast, even though they're the local team. But, you know, we keep eyes on things. Trey, you are a student of the women's game. Tell us what we should be looking for in, you know, general NWSL narratives and what's already coming through after a weekend of matches.
You know, a lot of similar things. It's difficult because a lot of the players that were playing in the Gold Cup and other international matches, you know, half of them or so were still resting from that experience. So you didn't get the full gamut of full talent in every match. I noticed like there's a lot of feeling things out in some of these matches. You know, like I look at Washington Spirit, who have they're completely rebuilding. They signed every single one of their draft picks. They have like six or seven, and they ended up with 0.02 expected goals. So like, yeah, they're going to need some time to work things out. So yeah, it was a good like litmus test. I say like Gotham specific, they were missing two or three of their U.S. Women's National Team players in their Challenge Cup game against San Diego, and they played well enough. They didn't get the win, but I'm still excited for Gotham. You know, Yael is she's a fucking monster in the best way possible. Like, just like every decision she made last offseason, from the easy to make to the extremely risky, they all planned out. And she doubled down this offseason. She traded for two more additional U.S. Women's National Team players. And I'm just excited to see how they all, when they're all on the field at the same time, what's it going to look like? Because that starting 11, it's going to be nasty. It's going to be top to bottom the best most talented roster. So it's more about, you know, can they, and it helps that there's another expansion team this year in Bay FC. So, you know, they seem unthinned and even stronger, even though an expansion team was introduced. So, I think Gotham's in a really good place. I highly recommend watching them once they get it all put together. And I can't wait till they have their strongest starting 11 out there to see exactly what it's going to look like. And we'll have a lot more to say then. But just go and watch Gotham. I think, like, NWSL Plus is a thing now. It's like, it's not a streaming service. It's just like a login you use so you can, and it's free so you can watch every game. Just do that. And it's going to be, they're going to have games everywhere. So, yeah, Gotham's going to be sick again. I can't wait till we can talk more completely about them. And obviously, we're going to cover the Olympics this year and stuff like that. So, I'm excited. Obviously, I'm excited. Like my favorite player was released by Racing Louisville, so I don't have to be conflicted anymore. I can be a full Gotham supporter now.
Nice, fun, amazing. Next match is Sunday at 7 p.m. against the Portland Thorns. That will be fun. It will be.
Portland didn't look good. That was exciting. That game was on national television, and it did it had 270,000 people watching. That's great numbers for NWSL. Patrick Mahomes was there. He loved it. The first women's soccer stadium specific in the world opened. And that was a 5-4 match, Kansas City against Portland. I think Kansas City was up 4-1 at one point. So that was an awesome way to start the season, was that match. But Portland, they have Jesse Fleming. They signed, who was at Chelsea, and I love her to death as a player, captain of Canada. So that should be a fun game. Look, you teed it up perfectly. Watch that game. And Sophia Smith, the best forward on the planet, for my money.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah, hell yeah. It's not the only tournament. I mean, it's not a tournament. It's a whole season. But it's not the only competitive play that's kicking up now. The U.S. Open Cup is starting, Trey. Mm-hmm. What are you going to be watching for, if anything, now that major MLS franchises are not sending their best?
Including us. Mm-hmm. Well, we got the baby birds out there.
Nice. Is that new? And I haven't heard that before.
Yeah, I like it. You know, we cut some of them, you know, the Nico Benalcazars of the world. You know, of course, Johnny Dennis is still dealing with cancer, and we send our best thought, our T's and P's to him.
Hey, let me shout out the third rail real fast, because there are a number of names that you might recognize on the GoFundMe list. But the third rail put out a call, did a sort of pass the plate, and made a substantial donation to the GoFundMe for John Dennis. And it's, I just think it's a remarkable show of character and exactly what a supporters club is for. And I applaud them for doing it, as I do everybody who contributed to a pretty good sum. It's looking, he's made some real headway on that sucker.
Awesome. Paul Harvey wrote a huge, humongous piece for The Outfield on NYCFC 2 that is not out yet. It will be out soon. Recommend reading it before the Open Cup starts. It might come out after. I'm not entirely sure. But he said, his quote after the game they lost to Inter Miami 2 at the beginning of the MLS Next Pro season this past weekend, and he said, oh, they might be good. Like, we all... We all expected them to not be good, given all the names that were cut, but they have all the young guys, the prodigies that were in preseason with NYCFC, the Aro Yavs. Got to learn how to pronounce his last name. Drew Baera and Maximo Carrizo. Maximo Carrizo, like, just watch the Open Cup if only to... Or protest it. I'm okay with that, too. But if you are going to watch, Maximo Carrizo has... he seems to be much as comfortable as ever on the ball. Malachi Jones got the start, And he's clearly physically at a different level than all the players on either team. And I'm sure he will be in the cup if he plays that game. And then, you know, Yags, who I'm excited about. Yagodayev, our star goalkeeping prospect as well, who's going to be at college in the fall. So now's the time to watch him play for us. So, yeah, I would say, like, focus on the young guys. We'll see what first-teamers will get dropped down for the Open Cup match. Yagodayev as well. And then, yeah, we'll see what happens.
I guess I'm looking forward to it. It seems it's just such a weird sort of tense, standoffish situation that it feels like there'll maybe even be like a little bit more attention paid to the early stages of the Open Cup than normally would be. Oh well, on we march. Trey, the news came out this morning. Yankee Stadium is going to be playing host to some of the biggest clubs in the world. And no, I'm not talking about NYCFC. I'm talking about AC Milan and Manchester City, who are going to be visiting their sister school here in New York, studying abroad for a summer friendly at Yankee Stadium. Wacky. What do you think the rationale is behind this? I mean, simultaneously, or not simultaneously, but in the same stretch of demo games, we have Real Madrid and Barcelona playing at MetLife Stadium in what seems to be primarily a stress test for the World Cup, right? For the logistics of getting a packed house into the World Cup final, because Lord knows, folks, at that, a lot of people will go to that match. Mm-hmm. But what's the, you know, why would AC Milan and Man City play at Yankee Stadium of all places?
Well, I'll explain. Yankee Stadium owns a part of AC Milan, which is why if you go to a Yankees game, you'll inexplicably see AC Milan gear in their store.
That's so funny.
Yeah, such a random acquisition they made, but it is an acquisition. They own part of AC Milan, so and then they face Man City, who, of course, Yankees also own a part of NYCFC, which is part of City Football Group. Mm. So the Yankees have somewhat of a stake in both of these teams that will be playing. Should be a good one. You know, AC Milan's not the best team in Serie A this year, but they're certainly one of the three best teams in Serie A. Christian Pulisic, I believe, has scored in 4 straight games. And you can fucking bet your fucking ass he will play some minutes on a game in American soil. It's not going to be all scrubs. You'll see some big names. So it's exciting. You know, Man City hasn't been here in maybe it's 2017. Because last time they were here, I got to meet Gundogan and Gabriel Jesus. They came to the locker room after the NYCFC game. So it's been a while, but it should be fun. And then you get Pep Guardiola coming and seeing what it feels like to coach in Yankee Stadium, because, you know, he might coach in Yankee Stadium sooner than later. You know what I'm saying?
Do you think it's realistic? Do you think that chatter is?
Absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely. Yep.
Okay.
I do.
Great. Good.
Put me down on that side of the bargain.
Sure. Keep on pushing the energy in that direction.
I think he could. He owns a house here. What else does he have to win?
Sure. I don't know.
His contract ends summer of 2025, maybe. Maybe 26. I think it's summer 2025.
Is that fun for him? Does it change what NYCFC... Like, is NYCFC's resource allocation changed meaningfully by Pep Guardiola coming to coach here? Do you know what I mean? By which I mean NYCFC's resource allocation, but City Football Group's resource allocation.
Well, he's not beholden to CFG, right? It's like he's just contracted to them like any other player. And also, I think that he, like, coach is coach. Like, I think he's probably close to being done with the biggest leagues in the world. You know, if he doesn't come to NYCFC in the next 3 years, fine. He'll go to Italy or something, another league where he can win. But outside of that, I think he would be comfortable coming because he might be nearing, you know, a place where he feels comfortable. But at the same time, coaches never stop coaching. They always want to coach, especially at that level. So he might be willing to, you know. Jurgen Klopp is peacing out after this year, so... You know, is he going to feel the same? I'm sure he has similar thoughts in some regards. So, but it will be a stress test, right? Like, we've never had a coach at that level coach in MLS. We've had plenty of players. We got Messi right now. But we've never had a real coach at that level come and coach. So that would be interesting to see if it happens, which, again, I'm going to say I'm just going to put my money on yes. Just to hedge my bets ahead of time.
What do you think the timeline is on it?
I mean, I just told you. I think, you know, summer 2025 is contract ends. Maybe the 2026 season leading into the new stadium. Then he can be the first coach in the new stadium. Sure. And then he'll retire.
Sure. Lots of high schools in the New York family that need a good coach, you know? He can hang out here at his house, work with some, you know, on one of the many on the many city sponsored fields, with some at risk youths. That's fun. That would be a fun movie. Trey's unimpressed. Trey, I took an edible like
no. What else you got?
20 minutes ago. So we're gonna see if I make it through the rest of this run. As it starts to settle into my body. That's it, I think. Oh, no, let's talk about the U.S. men's team.
Yeah, they're playing Thursday against Jamaica, I believe. We got two games in Nations League. And it's just good to see the A-team, you know? We're going to see the A-team.
It's the first of two matches against Jamaica. But, you know, we'll... Oh, no, that's not right. That's not right at all. But we will see them. What do you expect from them? What are you looking out for? I know that this isn't where you've got, you know, the primary focus right now, and probably it's just going to be a continuation of the A-team that we've come to expect. But is there anything in the chatter, in the discourse, that's worth noting?
For me personally, I'm looking at, like, two things. Firstly, can we really dominate local competition? Can we get back to not being scared to play lower level teams in our area? Because the last time we played Jamaica, like the last two times we played them, it's a little scary. They've been picking up players too. They got Mikael Antonio. They got some other guys. They got a Tavon Gray. They got some guys. So they've improved. And it's like, can we still dominate mentally and also on the field, like in a way that we should? And secondly, I'm looking at, like, who is the striker? There's like six or seven people up for that one spot. I'm really encouraged that Haji Wright got brought up as an injury replacement. Perhaps he could have been called up to the full team, but I'm glad he's there nonetheless because he's on fire right now. Him and Sargent and Pepe are all, like, on fire, and they haven't been kind of the 1A starters in that position for 2 or 3 years now. So can we see what they can do? That's going to be what I'm looking for. And I want to see Tavon Gray against them, whatever.
Yeah.
Against his old team.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fun. That could be fun. I'm looking forward to that as well. Yeah. Lots of goals. That's what I want. I want to see lots of goals. I want to see people on fire. I want to see young guns feeling their oats, particularly against Jamaica. I just think it's fun and it's great and we love our CONCACAF homies, but matches like this are a chance to demonstrate great power and great responsibility, and that's sort of what I'm hoping for here. Speaking of great responsibility, yep. Trey, I would say that the NYCFC side that we saw claim their first 3 points this last weekend is a great responsibility to us, the fans, to at least endeavor to continue that streak this Saturday against Cincinnati. As you read possibilities in that match, do you think it's likely that we come away with a point? I'll tell you, Google says it's likely by 1%.
No, I don't. Well, they're wrong, Google. I don't know if likely is not the word I would use. I think it's a great test. I think we match up extremely well against Cincinnati, to be honest. I think we've matched up pretty well in the past times we faced them. I think tactically, like, we do, we're pretty, if we can be as secure in our possession as we were against Toronto, we have a very good, I don't want to say a very good chance. We can find comfort in the game if we play the way we played in this last match. Obviously, the storyline here is Keaton Parks is out with a red card. Munsif Bakrar is out against for international duty. Jovan is out as well. Tevan Gray is out. Mitja Lenic is out. Our backup goalkeeper's out, Romero, and Christian McFarlane is also out. So that is a lot of people. That is not great. And Talos Magno's out with injury.
Who's in?
That has not been released yet, but I presume.
Wow, breaking.
Who's in is the question. That is the question.
I mean, so is it just a fucking shit can game? I mean, what do you do with that?
I don't think it is. I think this is a game that we can piece together a team that can fit, frankly. I would like to see... I think there's multiple ways you can approach this match if you're Nick Cushing. I was encouraged by Nick Cushing, and we have a press conference with him, you know, when this episode is going to come out. So I don't know right now what he'll say, but after the Toronto game, and some of the players were saying as well, like, this Cincinnati game, they're going to have to plan for specifically. And I'm glad they said that. I'm glad they're understanding, like, we have to change what we're going to do. We can't just pretend like it's any other game with our same system and just fill in players. There's too many people missing to do that. So you have to plan differently. So I would look at two different things. Like, you could try to play your same four in the back, and at right back you could put Jason or Tanisiewicz, who we have not seen yet, but has some experience at right back. You could play Burke Risa at left back and then play Kevin O'Toole at right back. He knows how to play on the right side as well. I would presume Jason would get that spot if that's what we want to do. Also, you can play three in the back if you want to put Tanisiewicz in, if you want to put Justin Hack in, if you want to put James Sands in and drop him in as a center back. I would not do that, and I'll get to that in a second. And then up front, we don't have any strikers. Our third string number nine on this team is Alonso Martinez, and we literally don't know. Like, we've seen like 12 minutes of him, so I don't, and we've seen 0 minutes of him at striker, so... I don't know how that would work. I would presume we play Santi as a false nine. I would love to see that. He knows how to press in that position, obviously. I feel like it would be fun to see him kind of do what he does there. And it would be dangerous, you know, in any other game, or in any other season. But we have Hannes Wolf now, who can certainly cover a lot of what Santi does in the midfield. Hannes Wolf is more than capable of doing himself.
Yeah.
So on the wings we have Julian, and then we can have either Jason, or I would love to see Ojeda in this match. That would be a great run out for him. If I was personally doing it, I would have Ojeda and Julian there and put Jason at right back and try to keep as much the same as possible. Like, I know I just said I'm happy they want to try something new, but at the same time, let's keep a little momentum, a little bit of structure, and just switch around the parts.
Right, that's the whole question, right? Because, like, you've garnered a ton of capital.
I know, I'm doing double speak.
Right, no, now, but I'm with you, and I think that it's going in the same direction that makes a lot of sense to me, which is that actually priority probably shouldn't be taking a point. Priority should be continuing the training and the sense of, right, like, I mean, I don't think you can play this. I think what you're doing with these players, if you're Nick Cushing, is not, you can't afford to treat every match like the most important match. What he's messaging to us over and over and over again is playing the long game. And so in this match with a ton of missing players, consistency still seems like priority.
Yeah, I think, and that's why, like, I'm happy that's, so this is how it's not hypocritical. I'm happy that the team and Nick Cushing are saying we have to plan specifically for Cincinnati, but I think you can do that with the same structure that we've kept, because they're going to let us have some possession. They are not a they're not a fully possession team, and they're not a fully pressing team. They're certainly more of a counterattacking team, and they're dangerous and they're scary, and I'm scared of them. But if you can keep a lot of the pieces in place, my only argument, like, playing three at the back probably makes more sense to in terms of replacing all the players at an adequate level with the roster we have. However, my big counter argument, and probably what I want this team to do most, is that James Sands has to be in the midfield, because I think he defensively was very solid against Toronto, and we need him to shadow Lucho Acosta. Like, I obviously, very well known, I did not vote for him for MVP last year, but that does not take away from how good he is. I still think he's a top 10 player in this league, and which is controversial in itself to say, but that's where I have him. And we saw this past weekend how much he changes the game. If you want to make an argument for him as MVP, just look at how different the team... He's such a motivational player, not just in how he behaves and speaks and communicates with his teammates, but how he is in the ball, on the ball, how he plays the game. He's a motivational player. So having someone like James Sands be able to disrupt him makes me want to lean towards having James Sands protect the box, protect the space in front of the box, and shadow Lucho Acosta as much as possible. Fucking clip his heels as much as you want. Get that yellow card. I don't care. Like, make sure they don't get into a rhythm so that NYCFC can stay in a rhythm and just build from there. And at the end of the day, like, I don't know. That's what I would do. But I would have, let's do senseless starting 11 very quickly. Freeze, Risa, Martins, O'Toole. I would put probably Jason at right back if I'm doing this. Then Sands, Perea, Hannes, Santi, false nine, Trapito, and Julian Fernandez. What would you do? Would you play three at the back and then play a wide wing back, or would you play four at the back, and if so, who would you have as your right?
Don't ask me. I am.
No, so you bitch.
Nope, I'm bitching out. I am. I think I follow the same mode. You said Jason at right back.
Yeah.
I think I do Jason at right back as well. I just think it's, I think it's more of a legacy position for him, like, you know, in the long time that we've had him. And that Jason's...
I just think the profile isn't that different from Micha.
Yeah. And that his versatility is such that, like, you, wherever you've plugged Jason into doing his job, he does it at the same level of quality, no matter where it is, you know? So again, there's an element of consistency there. Is my, like, short okay. and boring answer, you know what I mean? I'm not a creative enough soccer thinker to say, okay, well, what would the three in the back necessitate, and do I believe that it's possible with this side? I don't know. No. Let's just do, like, you know, let's do something fucking familiar. What do you say the scoreline is, Trey?
I think a tie would be so fucking good. Be so good. I think the biggest piece they're missing is Miles Robinson, but outside of that, I think they're going to be pretty strong, so it's going to be tough. Look, we know these two games are going to be hard, and I'm not excited to talk about the Miami game, because I've watched every Miami game since, and yeah, I'm terrified, and I knew I would be. I knew I would be. I called it. Like, I don't know, all these people trying to trick themselves into thinking Miami would not be a good team. I know Messi's, like, somewhat injured. It doesn't matter. I'm getting ahead of myself. I would say 1-1 would be ideal. What about you?
Yeah, I'd like to see a punchier game. I'd like to. Ideal for me would be like a 2-2. I think we need to open up more accounts on this side. But I don't think it's reasonable to expect that we're going to pull away with it. If I'm predicting a tie, I think it's going to be a high scoring tie, especially because I see our cohesion falling apart a little bit, and it's going to be, and if it is a 2-2, it's two mistake goals against us, and two relatively individual efforts, not team goals, two mistake goals against us and two individual effort goals for us. Maybe one of them's a set piece. Which is, yeah.
Yeah.
like a penalty. You know what I mean? Like one penalty.
Yeah,
one like screamer from an overdue screamer from Moncef Bakrar.
Well, Bakrar's out.
No, you said because Algeria. That's right. Never mind.
Yeah.
So no, actually,
from Julian maybe.
Sure. Sure, that would be great. And it.
I think you're at least tapping into something that will be in effect. Is that for some reason Cincinnati fans fucking hate us? Like they. Just, this will be a punchy game because they don't like us.
Well, great. We should practice it. I mean, I think it's particularly important to take the point and to play for the tie away, but it doesn't feel like we can learn a lot from this match, so I don't know. We'll see. I'm excited to see. It'll be fun. It'll be punchy. Yep. It'll be a goofy time. Trey, where do you tweet at?
Trey Fillmore, what about you?
At Jake Beckard, and you can find us both at Blue Balls Pod.
Blue Balls Pod.
We're still selling merch if you want to drop a dollar in the tip jar or pick up a nice t-shirt or mug, a cap. The weather is getting warmer. Not this week. It's going to get fucked up cold again, but then it's going to bounce right back. If you want to free up your arms, get one of these sleeveless tees that Trey and I have been rocking on our downtime. Linktr.ee/blueballs is the aggregate link. But also, if you just want to keep the lights on, hey, we super, super appreciate it. Thank you so much for listening. If any of the stuff we just talked about happens, you'll hear about it next week. See you then. Talk to you then. Bye.
Bye.